this club's about winning trophies. I'm inexperienced in a lot of those things.
Can you believe it?
Almost lost the cup and you win it. The new European champions, the treble, the dream come true for you.
Oh, I can't believe it. Football, bloody hell. But they never give in. That's the winner.
Welcome to the American Red Devils podcast. I'm John.
I'm Alex.
And we are bringing you the best Manchester United news from this side of the pond.
Ooh, sir, how you doing? We have an extra special international break podcast with an interview with none other than world-renowned artist Stan Chow.
Yeah, big international break podcast. We figured, got to do some reflecting here. We're obviously big fans of Stan Chow. For those who don't know him, he is a illustrator and designer, born and bred in Manchester, England. He illustrated a famous poem, sir, that you have hanging in your office, The Govan Boy, and that's kind of how we got to know him. And if you haven't looked up The Govan Boy, I would recommend taking a look at that poem. It gives a little history about Sir Alex Ferguson, sir.
Does him right. It's an awesome poem and an even better illustration done by Stan Chow. So we are very humbled and excited to have him on the podcast this week. Great guy, proper Manc,
huge United fan.
Might be Ole out, but can't blame him for that.
Look, Stan was amazing having him on the pod. And for those who don't know him, we recommend checking out his art. You can find him on Twitter at Stan_Chow and on Instagram as well, Stan_Chow. That is kind of his moniker across social media. He also does some football jersey designing on the side, and he's done a ton of different advertising campaigns. He's even designed a White Stripes album, which was nominated for a Grammy. So our first Grammy nominated guest. We don't have people on the podcast if they don't have a hot view on Manchester United, sir. So without further ado, an interview with Stanley Chow. Well, we would like to welcome a world-renowned illustrator and designer, Stan Chow, to the podcast. Stan, it's a really, real honor to have you on the pod today. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. A little nervous, but I'm good on the whole.
No need to be nervous here on the American Red Devils podcast. Look, let's start at the beginning. Tell us about your experience growing up in Manchester and how it impacted your life.
It's really hard. I think it's like any other person growing up in their home city. You know, I grew up in Manchester. It is a great city. I spent most of my youth in Chinatown. It's really hard to explain this. This is one of the questions I was going to struggle to answer, really. You know, I had a great upbringing, it's very much a part of me, Manchester is, and I still live here. I have no kind of inclination to want to leave the city, really. It's a city I still love very much, even though it's grown really quickly. In terms of like when I was growing up, it was a very small provincial city, is how it felt, an industrial, small industrial city. But now it's like a mega cosmopolitan metropolis now, which is great to see.
Yeah, big business with obviously you got a nice football club there in Manchester. Maybe a few these days, but I'm sure you see some more light blue jerseys than you did back in the day.
Yeah, the balance of red and blue is quite equal, I reckon. You know, like back in the day, I've got as many friends who are City fans as there were Man United fans, to be honest with you.
Maybe they're a little more vocal these days.
Yeah, a little more vocal, a little happier.
Got more to be proud of, I'm sure, right? They have they've been chomping at our heels for the last couple of years, so that's not been that much fun.
But they're still bitter, though.
Obviously. Well, the reason why you're on this Manchester United podcast is you are a self-proclaimed big Manchester United fan.
Yeah. What is your first memory of Manchester United, Stan? Was it love at first sight?
It's really hard to say what was love at first sight. My history with Man United is quite a long one, really, because it was my father that got me into Manchester United. He used to work in a restaurant, and the players like Bobby Charlton, George Best, Nobby Styles, Dennis Law, they all used to go to the restaurant that he worked in. So whilst I was growing up, he was just talking about these players, basically. Then later on in the 70s, when I was born, my dad eventually bought a Chinese takeaway, and we had like Lou McCarvey coming in and Gordon McQueen coming in to Lou. So the links with Man United were always strong, basically. And then in the early 80s, I was bought on Man United football top, and that was kind of that sealed the deal, really.
So you got in a little bit when we weren't at the top of the peak. It wasn't exactly Sir Alex Ferguson days, so it felt a little bit it feels these days, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, it was way before then. You mean it's like, yeah, it was when we were rubbish.
Yeah. The season we're compared to right now. What was Lou's order at the takeaway shop? Was he a player? Was he piling on the chips? Was that just the way he did it back in the day?
Well, I can't actually remember what his orders were, but my dad in the betting shops, basically.
I wouldn't give him too many chips if he was if he was playing. I'd be like, Lou, you gotta watch the weight there.
Fergie would never allow it.
No, but I do remember him coming in because I remember seeing him once in the chippy and then seeing him like on TV like him soon after. Oh. But my dad would always talk about him. You see, I think him and Lou McCarvey became quite good friends over a few years.
Who was your dad's favorite player?
Oh, George Best. He was always talks about George Best all the time.
Georgie,
good choice.
Yeah,
that's top lad. What's your fondest memory of Manchester United? I'm sure there's a few. You know, we're talking about the tough times back in the 80s, and then obviously you have the heydays. What was your favorite memory there?
I'll tell my most recent favorite memory is the Robin van Persie goal. You know, against Aston Villa.
Oh yeah, great goal! What a pass from Rooney.
Yeah, I was there on the. I was there like there. You know, we won the league title on that day. That was an amazing goal. Yeah, it's an amazing evening that was. But any early memories? I think winning the FA Cup in 1983 was a fun memory of mine. You know, when we won the replay 4-0, that was when I first understood United. Well, it's the first time we won anything like in my since I can remember, basically. So that was a very fond memory when Ray Wilkins scored a goal and I can't remember who scored the others, but I remember Ray Wilkins' goal particularly clearly.
It's amazing about that RVP goal. That was only 6 years ago. Doesn't that feel like a lifetime? It's been it's been so many dark times since then. It just feels like generations.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I know.
It was too easy. It was too easy back then. You get RVP. What was it 23 mil?
27 mil. Yeah.
You break Arsenal's hearts. You win the league, and then the retirement. How did that hit you when you heard? I mean, the earth shaking news. I caught it here in the States.
Well. I got to hear it through the grapevine like a little bit earlier than most people. But yeah, it was a hard day. It felt like a death in the family, really, when Ferguson retired. You know, it was just like I remember just kind of like being very quiet for the whole day.
What kind of presence did he have in Manchester? You know, was he always just larger than life, kind of like mythical figurehead whenever he was around town?
Well, the thing was, is like, you know, like I have met him a couple of times, but like, but everyone has full respect for him. You know, but everyone kind of has a kind of a strange. They've got a vision of him being this kind of angry man.
The hairdryer, right?
Yeah, but he's a dominant kind of alpha male, and he is a bit like that, but really, I guess he is seen as a mystical figure to a certain degree, you know, but really after having met him a couple of times, he's a solid guy, man. He's one of the nicest men I've actually met, to be honest with you.
Wow, what's more intimidating, meeting Ferguson on his birthday or watching a match with a gaffer?
Oh my God! Meeting him on his birthday was scary. You know, it was like, what am I doing here? That was the first time when we got invited to his birthday, and I was like, literally, like, what am I doing here? You know?
Yeah, exactly. I can only imagine. He's like, what do you got?
Open mouthed and yes, thank you for the wine, thank you. You know, it was just very kind of. I just didn't have much to say to him really. You know,
how's his taste in wine? I've heard it's renowned.
Pardon?
How's his taste in wine? I heard he's got a pretty deft palate.
I'm sure he has got a deft palate, but he likes it by the gallon. You
know? More is better.
Yeah.
Oh man. Well, what is it like watching a match with him? I mean, you kind of got invited. If I heard through the grapevine, and it was after his surgery. So how's he doing? And then does he keep it bottled in when he's watching a match, or does the old manager kind of come out a little bit?
Well, to be honest, the game we watched, well, it was the first public appearance he made after his surgery. So that was mad to be invited to kind of watch a game with him.
That's huge.
It was very quiet. It was a boring game. It was the worst game of football ever seen. It was the Crystal Palace game. It was one of Mourinho's last games. It was a 0-0. Oof. And there was actually nothing happening in that game. So we had nothing to talk about. It was actually the whole point was to be there and talk about football. But we had nothing. We couldn't say anything. There was nothing. He talked about the players he liked. You know, I think at the time, like, Jesse Lingard was his favourite player at the club. I don't know if it's still the same now.
Fall from grace there.
Yeah. But, like, you know, yeah, it was kind of quite... We were both quite devastated, I think, you know, because, you know, there was just like, I can't believe we're watching this, you know.
Was there any feeling that the sack was coming? You know, did Fergie have an inside ear about what was happening?
It was, the hint was, like, there was a... We watched the game afterwards, actually. We watched, there was a Tottenham-Chelsea game that was on after. So we watched that in his lounge, like, after the main game. And he talked a lot about Pochettino. He loved Pochettino. And maybe I'm saying too much, but, you know, and for me, there, that's what I'm...
You're not saying too much at all, Stan. Keep going.
Our fans love this stuff. They want to know all the inside dirt, Stan.
I love Pochettino, too.
He said he liked Poch, and he's like, and that's when my kind of ears pricked up. And then, you know, but you can only ask him so many questions about, you know, what's happening. And he basically shut me down. If I was going to ask any questions about Mourinho, he just shut me down, you know. So that already gave me an inkling in kind of what was coming in the future, really.
How do you rate Pochettino as a coach?
Yeah, I do rate him, actually. It's a bit weird what's happening now at Tottenham, but I do remember, like, I think it was his second game at Southampton, where he brought Southampton to Old Trafford. And they played us off the park. I mean, we beat them 2-0, but they played us off the park. It was a very strange game, that was. You know, David Moyes was manager at the time, I think. And, it was like we couldn't get the ball off Southampton that game. And every time we got the ball, they'll literally win the ball off us immediately. So how we won 2-0 that game, I'm not quite sure. But I recognized how good he was after that game, really.
You miss David Moyes at all?
Right. Who misses David Moyes?
A tough period. Right after winning in 13 to go straight from David Moyes. That's quite a step down from the legendary Sir Alex.
It was a step down. I mean, I remember the day when it was like, is it going to be Moyes or Mourinho? Moyes or Mourinho? And it's like, come on, guys, it can't be Moyes, man, you know. And then I heard through the people in the know, it's Moyes. Moyes is going to be announced in an hour's time. So, are you kidding me, man, you know? So, but yeah, we got Moyes, but you know.
we got him.
I think if Mourinho came in that season, we would have done all right, you know.
Yeah, I think you're right.
He just came too late. He came at a time when he was already jilted once, you mean? It's kind of like he came to United as a second choice, basically, you know. So that was, so that's how he didn't come in bouncing, I don't think, you know.
Well, look, we have a tough question on that front on the managers. We said rank the following from worst to best: Mourinho, Moyes, and LVG. So we're gonna start with your worst manager of the three.
It has to be Moyes because he didn't win anything.
That's true.
This is true. Who gets second on that list?
Ah, God, you know, I'll say LVG because Mourinho did take a second, you know, like the season before last, you know, and that was a you know, and he brought Zlatan in, and Zlatan made me happy.
Oh yeah, it's Zlatan. He was a game changer completely. Yeah. You know, just a goal scorer leader. He got all the Jesse, Pogba, everyone playing well, and I think when he left, we never looked the same.
I totally agree. That's the argument I have with all my friends and United fans. It's like because he was the main focal point in the dressing room. I gather, you know, and he just kept he could keep the dressing room happy like with him there. You see, I felt he was a life and soul of the party, and everyone looked up to him.
You had such a void of leadership after he was gone, right? You had Rooney move on, and then you have him come on, and then when he left, I don't know. I think they expected Paul Pogba to step up and be the new leader, but I'm not sure he has filled into those shoes yet.
No, you know, but I think Paul Pogba needed someone else with him, you see. You know, I don't think he looks like the kind of person who can't go it alone, you know what I mean? You know, he needs a hand, you know what I mean? And whilst he's there on his own, I don't think anyone's giving him a hand, really. So he's struggling there on his own. That's what I think. You know what I mean? I don't. He probably hasn't got that many allies at Old Trafford at the moment. You know, and that's his main problem.
Yeah, it's a tough go all around. I imagine that dressing room we talk about all the time. What is it like right now in the dressing room? On current form for Manchester United, not a lot of leaders. Got to be fragmented. That's why we're seeing these results.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with you. You know, it's. Yeah, it's dark times, and I don't think anyone wants to actually kind of like go on the pitch anymore. You know, it feels like whatever they do, they're going to get criticised, and that plays on their minds more than anything else, really. I mean, like you go on Twitter, and every single player is slated to high heaven, and it's kind of like it must be discouraging for them.
You find yourself staying off Twitter after a bad result, Dan?
Pardon me?
Do you find yourself staying off Twitter after a tough result these days?
No, I go on Twitter actually, but I don't watch any football on TV or listen to any football podcasts. I'm happy to go on Twitter and just kind of read what's going on, but actually watching other teams play is what I find harder, really.
Really? Yeah, just stay away from it totally. We try to stay positive. I view Twitter as the worst in us, and you'd have to kind of look at the bigger picture a little bit with the team. And
I want to see what the fans think. You see, you know, it's important to kind of, but then you realize that there is a kind of the fans are split into two. You mean one half is very encouraging in terms of like we know what the problem is really. It's the guys at the top. You know,
Hashtag Glazers out.
Yeah. Exactly, I know. But there's other guys who can't see that as a problem, see, because they become Man United fans while Glazers were owning United.
Yeah,
and they don't see them as a problem because it's like, hey, but we won things under Glazers, you know. But you know, so it's I think they see the players are to blame, you know. It's but you know, quite frankly, yeah, the players do need to take a bit of the blame, but you know, but I think in terms of the structure of the whole club, you know, you look at what's going on at the top and it's all filtering down, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. You think this is the darkest period since being a Manchester United fan for yourself?
I pretty much think it is, yeah.
It's hard to argue, right?
Oh, yeah, man.
But ironically, though, I've become more of a militant fan, you know. You know, I'm kind of... I'm totally behind the club, I become more of a stronger Man United fan, despite hating the Glazers more and just despite being upset with the players. But as a dyed-in wool Man United fan, I've become more so, weirdly enough.
Yeah, I mean, this is part of it. On our podcast, we try to educate the American fan base because once you get into ownership and investment and politics and director of football, you're definitely getting up the chain. But it's why this team is where it is right now. That's literally the reason. Like you said, it starts at the top and all kind of bleeds down, even into the locker room. You had Sanchez overpaid. Does he want to be on the field? You know, it's really a cancer in the club.
Well, that was a bad mistake, like in terms of paying him so much. But it's not even just that. I think you got to look look at the other side of the club, like the training, the restaurant size, the smaller stuff, so to speak. You know, it's way like the players, people who work at a club aren't getting pay rises. You know, not about the players, but people who work in the admin side. You know, none of them are happy. You know. And I say, like, once that happens, it kind of it feeds onto everyone else. You mean, everyone's connected. Once you are United, you're connected with everyone else. You know, and it just seems to kind of be feeding through everyone, not just the players.
That's the reputation that the club's always had, right? Is it's kind of a family from the lowest level staff to the manager, and I think you're hitting at the fact that there's actually fracturing happening at the lower levels, which is not a good sign.
But there's also that, and I think also people at United know that the money, there's plenty of money coming into the club, but it's not spread around the club. You know, it goes straight back to the USA. I mean, like there's stuff like the stadium hasn't been touched for 20 years. You know, and that's ridiculous. You know, and you walk around and there's leaks everywhere, and it's like, well, what's going on, man? You know, but we were meant to be the richest club in the world. You know. Why aren't these things fixed? You know, why is the certain parts just so rubbish? You know what I mean? Compared to when you go to like the Etihad Stadium, it's like, well, everything's like brand spanking new here.
You can't fill it.
yeah.
Regardless. So, what do you think fans should do? Is it a boycott a match? Is it, fly banners? They've tried that. Green and gold. I've worn the green and gold scarf to every Manchester United game I've been to. What do you think the fans should do, Stan?
This is the hard bit because, you know, as a supporter of the club, I want to support my players that go on the pitch every week, you know. I mean, it's maybe like, you know, if you're going to buy I don't know, maybe not buy the merchandise, but, you know, it's hard to kind of, I mean, I think just kind of angry jeering every week is the way forward, really. I mean, but the problem is like only not everyone is aware of the situation. See, know, I mean, it's like, once everyone's made aware of what's going on, you know what I mean? Then something can be done. But at the moment now, it's like, you know, there's two parties, really. You know what I mean? It's like Democrats and Republicans, you know. It's like one half think the Glazers are all right, and the other half don't. You know what I mean? And once we convince everyone that it is the Glazers, then we can probably do something.
Yeah, I mean, this season is going to be the one to convince everyone it's the Glazers, right? I mean, we're 2 points off relegation. My question to you is: when they originally bought the club, the energy around the green and gold protests, the fan groups, wanting questions from the ownership. It seems to me that was much more when they bought it, and now it's kind of died off. It's almost like fans have a sense of security, or the Glazers are, paying off people to be on their side in the crowd. I don't know what it is, but I think the fans should be much more united on this topic.
Well, the thing was, Ferguson was too good. Ferguson won things on the Glazers. If Ferguson didn't win things on the Glazers, it would be a different story, but I think he just kind of overachieved, really.
I mean,
his overachievements have kind of masked, like, what the Glazers, the problem with the Glazers, basically, as far as I can see.
I mean, he won things in spite of the Glazers. It's kind of amazing if you look at how much money was invested back into the team, even when they sold Ronaldo, and he was able to still cobble together results and titles and go to Champions League finals. It's actually amazing. It even feeds in more to the legend of Alex Ferguson.
Well, exactly, and I guess that's why, like all other managers will struggle because, you realize how great a manager Alex Ferguson was, and it seems like other managers are struggling to follow in his footsteps at the moment.
Yeah, someone could have predicted that. I just hope it's not 30 years like those Scouse bastards. but we're going to pepper you with some questions on the current squad, Stan. If you were to buy a new Manchester United kit, I don't know if you're a kit fanatic and you get one every year, but what active player would you put on the back right now?
Right now? Oh, God.
It's a hard choice.
Oh. Right now, God. Jesus.
I mean, I don't buy...
I don't blame you.
I don't buy the Chevrolet kits just because, yeah. You know, I try to not buy the merch right now because of the ownership. But I put McTominay on the back. That's kind of...
Yeah, McTominay is good. You know what? It'd probably be Marcus still. Marcus.
Yeah, Alex, he has a Rashford jersey, number 10.
Yeah, I have faith in that young lad.
Yeah, there's been a lot of pressure on his back, and he's definitely not under the best current run of form, but I think he's got a lot of talent, and he's going to get better.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, you got to remember, he's 21. You know, that's the thing you got to remember.
How would you rate Ole so far in his 27 league games here?
Well, obviously, the first 10 games are great, but yeah, it's just been absolutely abysmal since Paris. I just can't, you know, something just, what happened, I'm not sure, but, you know, it was like that Paris game, after we won it, it was like we just hadn't recovered from that victory, you know. I think, actually, I noticed it was that actually when Paris Saint-Germain came to Old Trafford, the first leg of that European game is when you could see fractures happening. You could just see, like, actually, this team isn't that good, really, you know. So,
Yeah, we actually got to go to that match, Stan. Yeah. Thankfully, we went to Fulham away 3 days before that one, so we caught some of the Ole's at the wheel, peak Ole's at the wheel.
Stan, do you think it was poor timing on giving him the full-time job before they had locked up top four? Do you think they should have waited to the end of the season?
Absolutely. You know, the thing was, they said when Ole joined, he's going to have an answer in the summer, but they didn't keep to their word. The minute they didn't keep to the word was when you knew it's gonna go pear shaped, basically. I mean, like for weeks on end, even like 2 months in, the Ollie says, "We'll have an answer." There's no. I'm still caretaker. I'll tell you in the summer if I become permanent manager. But then they gave him the job, and it's like, oh my god. So I was happy, but what I didn't, you know, but I still wish they'd kind of, you know, wait until the summer.
Yeah,
but anyway, nobody knew that was going to happen. You mean we were on such a high that some of us felt we could even still win the treble.
I'm one of those for sure.
It felt special, right? I mean, yeah. when we were rocking and rolling on that away win streak, I mean, always at the wheel was something special when it was ripping and rocking.
Oh, I know. I mean, they had a handful of people like, we're going to win the FA Cup, we're going to win the league, we're going to win the European League. Oh, anyway, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be we're headed to Bournemouth away here in like a few weeks. I think it's going to be a miles off of what Fulham was at Ole's at the wheel.
We've forgotten the words all of a sudden.
Yeah, I know. So given all the turmoil, where do you think we're going to finish this season? Are we really going to be in a relegation battle?
You know, shit. It wouldn't surprise me at all, to be honest with you. It wouldn't surprise me if we're in a relegation battle with Tottenham.
Wow. Do you think we need to call Sam Allardyce if that's the case there?
Well, you know, if anyone I kind of feel Ollie has to go because, you know, it's not that he should be given time or anything. He should be given time, But once you feel the team have lost confidence in the manager, he's got to go. You know, you can't get rid of 10 players, but you can get rid of one manager. You just need someone in there to reinstall the confidence, basically. You know, because sometimes in management, I don't think it's a question of the manager's ability. You know what I mean? I mean, like Jose Mourinho, we know he was a good manager, but he lost the dressing room, so. So he's got to go. You mean it's as simple as that? I think like Ollie, there probably is a good manager in there, but like if the players lose confidence in you, it's game over. However good you are, as far as I'm concerned.
You think we're at that point yet? It does feel like he's losing a grip on the dressing room for sure after the last recent performances.
Yeah, I think he's got to go. It's a shame, you know what I mean? But having said that, he's probably never good enough in the first place. That's the thing, you know. And like, yeah, I think looking back now, yeah, we were too. Ed Woodward was too trigger happy in giving him a contract. You know, should have given him a 1 year contract at best, really. And yeah, so yeah, yeah, I think
Who would you put in to write the ship? Sorry, Stan. Who would you put in to write the ship for the end of the season? Would you maybe like see if Mick was up for the task, or would you try and bring someone from?
I don't mix it. Look, I see Mick at Hull City. He's not up for the task.
Hey, only at Cardiff, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, like, oh God, like, apparently, like, there's rumblings, like the players don't like Kieran McKenna, obviously. So it's the current actual coaching staff that they don't like, you know. I mean, I don't know how they feel about Carrick, but you know, it just seems like it's not just Ollie, it's the entire coaching staff that the players have lost confidence in. So it's it's a funny old,
It's very strange. I think Ole's tactics have changed as well. He seemed to be a little more brave last year, attacking 4-3-3, and now he's just kind of doing the same thing over and over.
The counter-attack, isn't it? You know what I mean? Yeah. It's almost kind of like it's like fantasy football in terms of like we're so well remembered in the past for scoring great counter attack goals, and that's what we always get remembered for. So he's just trying to use this as the platform we're going to play, you know. And it's just kind of too dangerous, really. You know what I mean? You know, the whole thing. You know, you got to kind of play on the front foot all the time, and we're not doing that. You know, We are literally kind of like, let's give them the ball and see what we can do, you know, when they lose it, basically.
Yeah.
And that was really evident against what's the last home game we watched? I can't remember the last home game now.
They haven't been memorable.
I've been trying to forget them, Stan, honestly.
Yeah.
I know the next one's Liverpool, and we're gonna be park the bus, Man United. Unfortunately,
it's so forgettable now. You mean it? Yeah.
You almost don't. You almost push them out of the memory block because they're so painful to rethink. But on that note, how long do you think it'll be, Stan, before we realistically challenge the title again?
Sorry, Stan.
I know these are hard.
It was a tough time to come on.
You know what? Like it could be in 2 seasons' time. You know? I mean, like football's foot. Fortunes, you know, good teams, their fortunes can change really quickly. I mean, you know, we've seen it with Chelsea where they'll win one season and then completely capitulate the next season. I could even see, like, you know, Liverpool could go tits up next season. You know what I mean? So it's like football's too funny, really, to actually make that kind of prediction, if you know what I mean. Because we had Leicester like a few seasons ago. Who can imagine that?
That was amazing.
I can't make that prediction, but I don't even think you can be realistic, you know, in any prediction that I make. I'm an optimist, so I'm saying 2 years, but like we need the right man behind in the club, basically, you know, and the right staff to make that happen. Because I think I have seen the players in the squad, and some of them can perform on their day. It's just what you just want them all 10 to perform on the day every week, basically, and that's what's not happening. You get maybe one or two players performing, but really, yeah, what's missing at United is all 10 players, outfield players, performing well, because we're not seeing that for seasons, you know. And like on all the games we do play, they're pretty small defeats, you know, or draws. And that's because maybe three or four players haven't stepped up to the plate. You'll get like five or six players playing well, and that's not good enough. If one or two of those players just played a bit better, then that'll probably take us over the line for a win. You know, I think it's very small margins, if you know what I mean.
No, it's true. It's absolutely true. What do you make of the signings that Ole has made? There's three additions over the summer. Do you rate Maguire, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, and Dan James?
I mean, I like Bissaka, Wan-Bissaka, because I think he's the best of the three. I think Harry Maguire, I was never a big fan of his, to be honest with you. I mean, it's a bit slow,
big
in my
head.
Opinion.
Big head.
I'm not gonna knock his big head.
You can't help that, poor guy.
I think that's a compliment. I actually think that if you're a central defender in England, I think that's a good thing.
Don't get me wrong, I like him, but I'm not fully convinced by him yet, you know. And Dan James, you know, is My God, yeah, he's the fastest player I've ever seen at Old Trafford.
Wow.
But like, he's so fast, but you know, but there's not enough end product really, you know. I mean, like, he's scored two great goals so far, or three goals. But you know, but I guess the problem is like, not everyone else is, you know, the thing is, like, if he does have a good game, nobody else has a good game, and so it's pointless. That's the main problem at United now. But so, no, but yeah, I can see potential in Daniel James, you know, because sometimes he looks amazing, but I just don't think he's got fully consistent yet.
If you were appointed director of football tomorrow, who would be your first signing in world football? No, spare no expense.
Oh, oh God, that's a good question. Let me think. I'm just trying to think who. Probably De Bruyne.
There you go. Yeah. We could certainly use him.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's a fantastic player.
You miss Paul Scholes a bit, getting that creative midfielder back at Manchester United, yeah, like that?
I miss Paul Scholes a bit. I miss David Beckham more, though.
Really?
I think I look back and I think Beckham was one of the most underrated players at United, you know.
And, yeah, all the drama.
Yeah, I mean the problem with Beckham is like he scored that wonder goal too early in his career, so everyone's expectations of him were too high, you know, I think, do you remember that goal he scored against Wimbledon?
Oh yeah, from the halfway line.
From the halfway line, yeah. If he scored that like seven seasons in, you know, the expectations would have been different, but he scored that in that game, and I was like, now we want to see that every week now, you know. and to a certain degree, he performed every week. You know, there was an assist every week. There was at least five or six amazing 40-yard passes or cross that always connects. He was on form every single week, and I think that was a problem. You see. Like everyone's expectation, he reached that expectation, and you couldn't go above that, basically, you know. So that's why I felt he was underrated, if you know what I mean.
No, totally, totally can see that. Just from a fan perspective, you know, I didn't watch Manchester United during his reign, but I could see all the drama post. Beckham's kind of been, yeah, you know, he went to Real Madrid, MLS, all that stuff. You know, his United days aren't really mentioned as much as the other class of 92,
even though his highlight reel is pretty class.
Oh my God, I can sit at home all evening and watch like David Beckham on YouTube, you know, and like if you compare his YouTube reel to Paul Scholes' reel, it's like he made more assists and scored as many goals, basically, if not more goals, you know. And but anyway, it's a personal opinion of mine. I love Scholes, don't get me wrong, but I still miss Beckham more.
Hey, everyone's got their favorites. Yeah. On the lighter side, Stan, if you could be the house DJ at Old Trafford, and I know you get out and spin the tables here, what would be the team's walkout song? We need it, right?
Well, you know what? I've actually done that before, you know. I've actually picked the tunes at Old Trafford to be played at one week a couple of years ago.
That's epic.
Some Led Zeppelin, something. We need to get the boys fired up.
I picked Kashmir by Led Zeppelin. That got played at Old Trafford, and I was very proud of myself to hear that.
That's awesome. And just wrapping up here, Stan, tell us about Stanley Chow FC. Tell us what you got going on these days. Our listeners love to hear your perspective on Manchester United. You clearly know your stuff. Been following the lads for a long time. Just tell them where they can find your stuff and kind of what you're about.
Okay, well, you can find my stuff on Instagram at Stan_Chow, or that's my normal day-to-day illustration work Instagram. But then there's my other Instagram account, which is Stanley Chow FC. And that's where I sell, like, customized football shirts, basically, and it's my little hobby, really. When I'm not drawing pictures, I like to improve old football shirts.
I really like the Blockbuster video one with the VHS logo. Hopefully we'll see an American Red Devils one up there soon, right?
Well, who knows? Is that if I get enough time? At the moment, I'm not been this busy ever before, but I'm actually doing some work for my United at the moment, actually.
Oh wow. So,
yeah, I can't say too much, and they probably said too much about the Glazers.
It's okay, they don't listen.
Glazers who? What? Yeah.
It's I don't even where I am now, but if time will tell. You know, I get requests for everything on a daily basis. So if the idea is good, then I might do something.
Maybe a screaming bald eagle. Maybe a Red Devil Eagle, something like that. But look, Stan, yeah, we're big fans of your art. Know you're a Manchester United through and through, and having your perspective on the podcast is awesome for all of our listeners. And yeah, just want to say a big thanks for coming on. It's been great. Well,
thank you very much. And hopefully I'll come on again soon. Again,
we would love that, Stan. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule, because it was an absolute pleasure on our end.
That was the interview. Thanks again to Stanley Chow for deciding to call into this pod. It's great for American fans to hear stories about David Beckham and the early days of Manchester United, hear what it was like in 1989, the season that we're being compared to right now, right, sir?
Lou McCary chip order, sir. It's all throwback.
Extra chips for Lou.
It's great. It's great to get a take about, you know, the past dark days of United, because things weren't always rosy at this club. So it's good to get Stan's take on, you know, another rough period for the club. We're going through one right now, but it was great to have him on the pod, get his take on everything, talk about some of his favorite players.
A lot of sage advice for the club from Stan. I'm going to vote for him to be the director of football. What do you think?
Seems like a top candidate for my book.
De Bruyne, I like that. I like that signing, sir.
How much is that? £200 million.
I would have gone for like Mbappe, but you're right. Our midfield's thin. Mbappe just be like too much, too much glamour up front, not enough, strength in the middle of the park. I really think that was a good call on what we need at Manchester United right now. Kind of like McTominay plus, if you will.
Plus plus.
Maybe McTominay is De Bruyne light.
Yeah, sir. There you go. That's a new one.
Look, this podcast will be getting you a Liverpool preview next week. Definitely follow Stan Chow. Definitely take a look at his art. Not only is a great Manchester United fan, but an unbelievable portrait artist. And once again, we thank him for coming on. Sir, as always, we'll be kicking a blue.
Kicking a blue.